Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit Zurich.ie to find out more.
Now, last May, you might remember we spoke with Dr. Paula Byrne, who's a lead researcher on a project, really interesting, called iHealth Facts, which had just launched a website to tackle myths around health. It's a research project funded by the Health Research Board and the HSE and supported by the University of Galway, aimed at encouraging critical thinking. Well, questions for Paula and her team came flooding into us then, and apparently they've been flooding onto their website ever since. So Dr. Paula Byrne is back with us today to give us a taste of what sort of questions a team is being asked and what conclusions they're arriving at. So Dr. Paula Byrne from iHealth Facts, you're very welcome back to the studio.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be back.
Now, we're delighted to have you back as well. The project, iHealth Facts, was started during COVID, wasn't that right?
That's right. So it started during COVID when people were concerned about myths and misinformation, you know, about, I suppose, the pandemic. But we repositioned ourselves afterwards and we kind of answer broad health questions, anything to do with something that can cause or cure illness or is good or bad for your health, we're happy to tackle.
Okay. And at the time, I distinctly remember talking to you because we were getting questions by text to 51551. You were answering questions about sea swimming, pandemic, do you remember?
Yeah.
And pineapple juice and dock leaves.
That's
so
right.
Has the kind of the nature or the profile of questions changed at all since then?
It has. I suppose we've moved almost completely away from COVID questions, thank goodness. And we can kind of see a pattern now of the, you know, the questions are kind of fitting into different categories that people are concerned about. And I suppose the two big categories that we seem to have identified are cancer, things that can cause or cure cancer, and sleep, interestingly enough. So those are the big ones for us. Yeah.
So what you basically do then is you look at the research on, you research the research.
We research
you the research.
You research
the research. Yeah. Okay, so let's take a look at those ones that you're talking about there. The cancer related ones first. And questions are along radio transmitters and cellular towers. What do you find around that?
Yeah. So if I could just go back a step, Sarah, if that's okay, and just explain. So what we're trying to do, we're trying to find good systematic reviews of evidence. So what that means is that somebody, either us or somebody else, goes out and looks for all the research on a particular topic and then brings it together in a kind of systematic way. So what we found with the cellular towers was that there wasn't a huge amount of research out there. We found one good high quality systematic review and they said there isn't enough evidence.
Oh.
We found then, and interestingly, a moderate quality systematic review, and it threw up a very interesting question because it found that studies where people were blinded, whether they didn't know that they were close to cellular towers, found that there was no difference in various outcomes. Whereas when people knew or thought they were close to cellular towers, they said that they experienced certain effects.
Really?
So okay. That might bring up this idea of a nocebo or placebo effect, that somebody, because you know something, you think something else is happening. So we didn't. We also found some lab studies, which aren't a really good way of, you know, you can't tell from lab studies if something is going to affect an actual human being.
Mm.
So we didn't really find anything on the cellular towers to either confirm or deny that.
Okay, concerns as well about the risk of alcohol and cancer.
Yeah. Now, if I could also explain that when we do a systematic review, we also have to kind of figure out what kind of studies are in the review. So broadly, there are two big types of studies. So suppose and I said I had invented a new drug for preventing heart attacks and I've given it to a group of people and I watched them over time and they didn't seem to have that many heart attacks. And I said to you, this is a great drug. It works. But actually, we don't know anything by just looking at one group of people. We need to compare them to a similar group of people who haven't taken the drug. And that's kind of the basis of what we call randomized controlled trials.
Mm.
We like randomized controlled trials, less so observational studies. So the one on alcohol then, what we had was we found 7 systematic reviews, but they were all observational studies. Now, 5 of those found that there was an association with alcohol and various types of cancer. And because we can see there's a kind of consistency in what we found, that kind of strengthens the findings of observational studies. Now, there were 2 reviews that found no association, but one was run on women in Muslim countries. And the authors reckon that maybe the women didn't report that they were drinking alcohol.
Okay.
And then the last one was a systematic review of only wine, which I was glad to hear found no association, but that's not really telling
me. I think we need a randomised test on that one.
Exactly.
What about the risk of using UV lamps when you're getting your nails done? You got questions on that as well.
Yeah. So this was kind of, and it shows how questions turn up. So this was a scare in the media, you know, that a study has found. But what the scare was actually all about was one study on mouse and human cells, which, as I've just said, these lab-based studies can't tell us anything. So when we looked for evidence of that, there was actually no good quality studies. We found three reviews. Some said, yes, it was a risk factor. Some said, no, it wasn't. Now, I've never darkened the door of a nail bar, so I'm not too concerned about that one. But lots of people are.
So let's get through a few more of them, right? Because you got an awful lot of questions. We spoke with Annie Curtis from the RCSI about nightcaps and the impact on sleep earlier. Now, looking at your research, Paula, I'd say there's a good argument, is there, for some old folk medicine, lavender and lavender oil to help you get off
to sleep. So this, again, not a huge amount of evidence, but what we did find were randomised controlled trials where you compare one group who uses it and one group who doesn't. Mm-hmm. And we found one good randomised controlled trial, but it was of a small group of women and it with an insomnia. And it found that women over time fell asleep quicker if they were using lavender. We then found a few other randomised controlled trials that weren't quite as good in elderly people, one in retired people, one in people with insomnia, and they all found that there was a bit of an effect, but we'd probably need bigger studies, but they are randomised control trials so we can have a little more faith in the findings, I suppose.
Okay. So Cormac spraying himself with lavender oil at
night.
Good
that
idea.
Works. Yeah.
Wafting around the place. Tell me about collagen supplements and skin aging. What did you find on this?
Well, we were all the female members of our team were very interested in this one. So again, what we found so four systematic reviews of randomized controlled trials. So we're a bit more, you know, secure in the findings. And they all, to a certain degree, found that there was a reasonably good effect from collagen. But they were small trials, but they were consistent. Now, of course, when you then start looking at something that maybe works, you have to consider, are there side effects? And we didn't look at that.
Okay.
So
always
consider,
with that caveat,
you know, there's the benefits
we'll take that
and
information.
Always the harms.
You know, I mean, like, here we are, like, grilling you on all, like, different aspects of life, basically. And people do expect scientists to have all the answers.
Yeah, they do. And unfortunately, we are the 50 shades of grey is what science is all about. So I suppose we more often than not come up with kind of findings that might or might not. We very rarely come up with findings that are black and white. And I suppose that's why I certainly have a big issue with people talking about the science, because it rarely exists on most topics. Mm. And also, if I could leave the studio today, and that if both of you, if anybody ever said to you, a study said, that your automatic reaction is, what did all the other studies on that topic say?
I think Cormac had a question. Cycling. Did you, Cormac?
There is a question, isn't there? It's like, really quickly, cycling and men's genitals.
Yeah.
Is one bad for the other?
Well, that was the fear. And my husband went distinctly green around the gills when we got this one in. So it was a question, does cycling cause nerve damage to men? And specifically, does it cause erectile dysfunction? So we didn't find anything on circulation and nerve damage specifically. We found one systematic review of observational studies that can't really tell us a huge amount, that did seem to find an association with erectile dysfunction. But I have to emphasise, that was an observational study.
Well,
I'm
still going to save the planet by cycling. Yeah. Dr. Paula Byrne from iHealthFacts, thank you very much indeed. And if you have any more questions you'd like to put to the research team, you can go to iHealthFacts.ie, where you can go and put the questions directly yourselves, and we'll have you back again. Paula Byrne, thank you very much indeed.